it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Wait a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 299. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies series with the Marlins this weekend. Phillies lose 2 out of 3 to the most unbeatable team in Major League Baseball. You can't solve these Marlins. They come at you from all kinds of different directions. And so we'll talk about the series and the Phillies salvaging a game on Sunday. And maybe the Marlins aren't horrible. We'll delve into that just a little bit. We'll talk about Saturday's game, Gabe Kapler. JT Realmuto, the Phillies' lone all-star this year. Again, the Phillies only have one all-star going to be playing in the midseason. Summer Classic. We'll talk some Phil's minor league prospects, free agency in the NBA, comparing it to Major League Baseball, the road ahead. Jeez, this is going to be a 3-hour podcast. Joining me to talk about all these things, as they do every Sunday night, is, of course, the head guy at The Good Fight, Justin Clue. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how you feeling, pal?
Remember Bamboo? That was fun.
That was a good time,
wasn't
it? Hope
everyone sold their t-shirts. Well, that was... Well, that was hot.
Breaking tea, through the good fight. That's a good-looking shirt, I'll tell you.
But that's over now. Dropped 2 out of 3 of the Marlins. The fun plant stuff is pretty much over. So,
I think you're right. I think they hit the nail on the head. So anybody who bought those Bamboo shirts, I really am curious to hear if you bought one, what you plan on doing with that. Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports, fantastic sports writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz is going to be, you're going to be covering the All-Star game coming up here in a couple weeks, aren't you? That's pretty awesome.
I am. I'm very excited. I've never been to the All-Star game before. I have a whole bunch of different stuff on my plate while I'm going to be there. I'll be there with Tim Brown and Hannah Kaiser, who's, I think, been a guest on Hit and Season before.
Both
Hannah,
have, yep.
Hannah's great. I met her for the first time when I covered the 2017 Baseball for All, Girls Baseball National thing. She was doing video for Deadspin. She's awesome. People are available. We're going to talk to them. Some of them are Phillies. It's going to be fun and cool.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. It sounds good. We'll have an insider at the All-Star game, so when you come
I will tell you all the juicy details. I will look for the Phillies' lone All-Star.
Maybe there'll be a coach around or something, and we don't know who the All-Star Home Run Derby participants are, so who knows? Maybe Hoskins gets an invitation. He said he would do it again if he was asked. Harper won't, so we'll see. But right now, it's just JT Realmuto going to the game, and we'll talk about that coming up here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let's talk about the series against the Marlins this weekend down in Miami. The Phillies lost the first two games of the series, blew a big lead on Saturday in a really disheartening game. They were stymied by Marlins pitching on Friday, but the Phillies' bats came alive again on Sunday. And really since the beginning of the Mets series, they've only had one game where they really haven't hit. Over the last seven games or so, the offense has been really humming, which is a good thing to see. We heard from Gabe Kapler before that game last week on Monday against the Mets that they were kind of shifting their philosophy, their approach a little bit. They weren't going to ask hitters to watch as many pitches, maybe be more aggressive going after fastballs, and it seems like it's worked. A lot of the guys it seems like the team's a little bit more comfortable up at the plate right now. But Justin, you mentioned it just a minute ago. We came out of that Mets series 4 in a row, all of them comeback wins, 2 straight games on walk-offs, and then you come into Miami. They just swept you at home. You're looking for some revenge. You've got all this momentum going into Miami. You've got Bamboo in the clubhouse. T-shirts are being sold all around the Delaware Valley, and you're coming into play the last place Marlins. And Justin, I mean, what is it about this Marlins team the Phillies can't figure out? Because it's nice they won on Sunday, but they're now 6-7 against the Marlins here in the early going of the season.
I don't know what it is specifically. Marlins seem to have problems beating just about every other team. Certainly in the NL East, they aren't dominant by any stretch of the imagination, but they just seem to have the Phillies number. And, you know, I look at it more from the Phillies side that, like, this is exactly what makes this team difficult to take seriously at this point. You know, the 4 wins against the Mets, we said, I think on continued success, you know, yeah, this is great. And I hope, you know, enjoying a sweep of the Mets is always easy, but it really just, you know, it's tough not to think long term. And the success of that series kind of depended on what happened next.
That was a great point you made. I heard you say that, and I wanted to bring it up on the pod because I think that's exactly right.
And they got the chance to play. Like, imagine if they were going from that series to facing the Braves. You would almost expect something like this. Like, that's a team they've struggled to beat and a team that's on fire right now. Playing the Marlins is, like, great. That should be, like, a cushion for this team, the way they're set up and the talent they have on board. Like, going from – they should have very easily been able to turn 4-game win streak into a 5-6-7-game win streak playing the Marlins. They should have just mowed right through them, but they couldn't. And, I mean, frankly, at this point, it doesn't even really matter why. The Marlins have been playing a little better lately, but, like, look at the numbers for the season. The Marlins are 13th in the National League in team batting average. They're hitting .239. Team OPS, they're in last. Home runs, last. Walks, last. Extra base hits, last. Total bases, last. Stolen bases, second to last. Their team ERA is 4.439, which is actually kind of middle of the pack. But they've allowed the third most walks in the National League with almost 300. Now, like, the one area that they are successful at is teams only have a .243 batting average against them. And yep. The teams that are the worst in that category are the Phillies and Rockies, two teams that are contending for a wild card spot, theoretically. So, you're just running into a team that knows how to beat you. And I don't know if it even matters at this point. The Phillies should just be able to beat the Marlins. And you could look at the numbers and figure out what's going on. But this is a team that's been given the green light to swing at fastballs, which apparently, again, it still seems ludicrous that they, like, weren't doing that.
I know, right? But
this is a team that seems like its offense has been given the green light. They feel free to unload on teams exactly like the Marlins, and they can't do it. Or they go out and have their bullpen give up a bunch of runs, like what happened in Game 2. So they're just not set up. If you're not set up to beat a team like the Marlins, I don't know how you're supposed to be taken seriously as a playoff contender moving forward. So, you know, at this point with this Phillies team, as we hit the All-Star break, it's just, we're at the point where it's like, you got to show me something. You know, we're ready to believe in this team, but when you drop 2 out of 3 of the Marlins and you get swept by the Marlins and you're 6-7 against the Marlins, a last place team that is last in most offensive categories as a team, What do you want from me?
it's hard to embrace the Phillies when they play this poorly against the last place team. I mean, when you look at the numbers, the Marlins are 7-6 against the Phillies and 7-20 against the rest of the National League.
Look
East.
How quick we freaked out. Brad Miller brought in a bamboo plant and we freaked out. The curveball machine, we came alive as a fan base. They gave us one thing. Like, this stuff is not even, it's not like clever, it's not a gag. It's just two things people saw, and we freaked out and put them on t-shirts, turned them into memes.
We're hungry and desperate.
One thing, like, we are ready, and it kind of just depends on winning, and they can't do it against the worst, one of the worst teams in the National League. They can't do it. So that's where we're at now. It's like,
they have a one game. The Marlins have their one game over .500 against the Phillies, and against the rest of baseball, they have a .253 winning percentage. But Liz, let me throw this out at you, because Justin, I hear all the numbers that you're saying for the season, and the offense, the Marlins' offense is pretty bad. Although against the Phillies, the Marlins' offense was quite productive in this 3-game series and in the series in Philadelphia. The Phillies' bats did quite well against the Marlins in the last 2 games of the series. However, I'll just throw this out there: in the month of June, the Marlins actually went 13-14 in the month of June. And today, obviously, as we're recording this on June 30th, wraps up a full month of games. So they played one game under .500 in the month of June. And their starters' ERA heading into Sunday was 3.72, which was fourth best in Major League Baseball for the month of June. They had the 12th best bullpen ERA. So I would say that I wonder if this team, this Marlins team, is just matches up well with the Phillies for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but, you know, it seems as though over the last month, the Marlins have been playing better baseball. Are they a good baseball team? No, but, you know, they're playing better baseball, and especially in the starting rotation, they've pitched quite well here. So again, Justin is 100% right. I think that the Phillies have to beat this team if they're going to be a playoff team. But do you give the Marlins any credit as well?
I'm looking at their last month of games. They won 4 straight just to start it off. 2 against the Padres, 2 against the Brewers. Then they lost 6 in a row, won 2 of their next 3, and then they faced the Phillies a whole lot. But not before being swept by the Nationals. They lost a series to the Pirates and to the Cardinals, and they were swept by Atlanta. Like, this is not a good team. It's not a good team. Like, they've been getting lucky, and they went 13-14 this month because they beat the ever-loving crap out of the Phillies. They kicked the crap out of them every single time they played them. Every single series, like, they looked better, but they still lost 2 of 3.
Yeah.
And that's bad. You know? They're just doing so badly. I think that their success against the Phillies has hidden what a really just substandard team they are.
I'm not even making a prolific point in stating that the Phillies need to beat the Marlins.
No!
No, you're not.
They're a bad...
Like, this is where we're at.
They are like the Orioles of the National League.
Just beat them. Like, just do it.
This is a team you beat, and when you lose 2 or 3 or get swept by them, it is embarrassing. They should be embarrassed.
Well, and in the game on Saturday, that was a game they had to have. They were up 6-1 in that
game.
It was Juan Nicasio and Adam Morgan imploded, giving up 6 runs in the bottom of the 7th. And that's the Phillies' bullpen. The Phillies actually have the best bullpen in the division, but it has these games where, you know, they'll go 2, 3, 4 games in a row where they're fine. You know, they may not be scoreless every time out, but they pitch well, they're fine. But they just seem every 4 or 5 games to have a game where they absolutely implode. And it just doesn't happen as often with some of the other teams in the National League East. These implosions happen a little less frequently for the Phillies, but they still happen too much for a team that wants to make the playoffs. But that's kind of it's also how a lot of bullpens around baseball are right now. But I wanted to talk to you guys about Kapler's decision to take Zach Eflin out in that game. And Liz, let me start with you. He took Eflin out after 89 pitches and 6 innings. Eflin had a 6-3 lead, but he was kind of getting hit around a little bit. Did Gabe Kapler make the right decision in taking Zach Eflin out at that point and going with Nicasio and Morgan?
I mean, hindsight's going to be 20/20. He shouldn't. I at the time, I thought he should have kept him in a little longer. I mean, he's a grown-up. He's a big boy. He should be able to get himself out of a situation. You have to trust your pitcher to do it. You know, if he wants to be the type of pitcher he's shown himself capable of being, Kapler has to do the same thing that he did with Aaron Nola last year, which is trust him. You know, he might have been getting hit around, but I don't think that's necessarily a reason to pull your starter when you have that big of a lead. They had a lead at the time. Like,
it was a 3-run lead at the time.
Yeah,
he had just given up 2 runs in the 6th inning, but managed to retire 3 of the final 4 batters after giving up a 2-run home run to lead off the 6th inning.
Yeah, like a 2-run home run is difficult, but it's not the same as every single pitch you're throwing is getting knocked into, you know, the infield, the outfield where no one can get it. Like, I think it was premature. I wish he'd left him in. He has to trust him more. Like, he should have been able to pitch at least a little bit into the 7th. And I was so disappointed. I was disappointed by that. I feel like Gabe Kapler is a better manager than that. And I think he's just talking himself out of, he's talking himself out of trusting his pitchers, or that the bullpen needs work, or that they can handle it. And the bullpen, I'm sure they should be able to handle it, but why put them in there when you don't need to?
Justin, what do you think?
You know, we're kind of trained to see a pitch count under 100 and think it's premature to take a guy out. But what, it was his 4th time through the lineup?
It would have been
point.
His 4th time through the lineup coming up,
By his own admission, he's saying, I was ready to come out of that game. I didn't fight him at all. So, no, I mean, I don't think it was the wrong decision, and especially when we've watched so many leads evaporate. Now, given the gamble it is to put anybody from this bullpen into a pressure situation, you could call going to the bullpen at all the wrong decision. Morgan hasn't been the effective reliever that he was at the beginning of the season since coming back from the injured list, and Nicasio has been an occasional disaster every time he enters a game, so... Yeah, no, I don't think it was the wrong move, but like, it always seems like somebody on this pitching staff has the potential to get lit up. So I think it's the right move in that situation, because Eflin you know, Eflin's gassed. You know, he's yeah. You don't want to be. It could have easily gone the other way. It could easily have left him in there, and then we could be talking about blaming him for leaving Eflin in too long. I think it was the right move. And you know, eventually he's going to have to use his bullpen. Kapler's going to have to go to the bullpen at some point. Like at some point, the bullpen's going to have to be solid or a more reliable component to this team. But I don't think it's tough to argue with that decision, especially with Eflin saying I was ready. It was over for me.
And that to me was the big thing where Eflin said after the game that he was admitting guys were barreling balls up on me left and right. And they happened to be hitting him at people. But I was lucky to get out of there with just giving up three runs. If the starting pitcher is basically saying, yeah, I think I was pretty much toast. I would rather have Kapler remove Eflin from the game after six and let Nicasio start an inning clean also, rather than have Eflin try and start the seventh inning, maybe give up a leadoff walk and then a double. And now you're bringing Nicasio into a game with second and third, nobody out with a tenuous 6-3 lead. You know, I'd rather have Nicasio, who hadn't given up a run the entire month up to that point. But again, he had given up some inherited runners during the course of the month of June. So it's not like no one had been able to touch him in June. But this was a situation where Nicasio started the inning fresh. And I you know, you could argue why go to Nicasio at that point. But now then you're just talking, okay, well, they don't have the personnel in the bullpen. They don't have a Terrace Tenaris. You know, they don't have a walkway that gets you to your closer.
You're just gonna drop that in there.
Yeah, yeah, you like that? Okay. I'm trying to just work it into the vernacular. That's the issue more than anything else. In fact, you didn't have a guy to get you there through that seventh and eighth inning. I was okay with the move here. I mean, listen, we'll criticize Kapler whenever it needs to happen, but in that case, I think he did the right thing.
I don't know. I still stand by my answer.
And that's fine.
He might have said he wanted to come out, but I don't know. I still don't see why you don't at least let him try to start the inning.
I don't see
why you don't just let him try to do it. Like, again, looking at how it ended, I don't think it would have mattered. They lost, who cares? But I also would have liked to see him try, because that whole clean inning stuff, I think, really gets people. I think it kind of cuts off. It's just a convenient cutoff point. And I think that's kind of, it's a weak thing to be like, you know, I want him to start a clean inning. Like, well, no, have him start when he needs to start, as opposed to, you know, just a clean cutoff point.
If you're a high leverage reliever, you should be able to handle some of those situations. And with a 3-run lead, you have a little bit of leeway. So I do hear what you're saying, Liz. I can see the argument for keeping Eflin in and letting him try and get another couple of hitters. But I was okay with Kapler coming out, and I think you're wrong. And by the way, we're talking about the Phillies bullpen blowing leads here. You know, the Braves don't have a great bullpen, as evidenced by the fact that the Mets just scored five times in the bottom of the eighth to take an 8-5 lead over the Braves.
Oh,
so now
nice.
Here's the thing. The Mets bullpen now needs to get three outs in the top of the ninth inning. So
good luck to everyone involved.
Strap in, everybody. So as we sit here, if the Mets are able to pull this off, the Braves will be 5.5 games up on the Phillies in the National League East. At this point, with the way the Braves are playing, the Braves are still playing really good baseball. You've got seven teams within 2.5 games of the second wild card right now in Major League Baseball. You've got the Cubs and the Brewers are tied in the Central, so one of them are holding the top wild card spot right now. The Rockies and Phillies are tied at 44-40 on the season in the second wild card spot. And then after that, you have the Padres one game back, the Nationals a game and a half back, the Diamondbacks two back, and the Cardinals are 2.5 games back. So, I mean, this is the state of the National League right now. Everybody in the National League, not named Dodgers and Braves, are pretty middling. 4, 5, 6 games over 500. Nobody's really playing great baseball. Everybody's kind of got a slightly above average team in the National League, but nobody's really, really good yet.
I think that's fine. Yeah. I love the competition. Like, I was listening to you say all of that, and I'm like, I think I know where this is going. And then you took a hard turn to everyone is middling. I'm like, no, the level of competition is pretty even. I don't want to see a bunch of teams running away with it. I want to see teams fight it out. I want there to be absolute chaos at the end of the season and have every team have a chance of making it. That's meaningful baseball everywhere. It's the dream.
Oh, I'm not complaining about the fact there's all these teams going for it. I'm just saying my main point is there's for all the flaws that we see in the Phillies right now, Justin, we see those flaws in all the other National League teams as well. There's you know, we tend to get really down on the Phillies and the fact that they're 4 games over .500 because they were at one point 11 games over .500 and they went through that long collapse. And, you know, there was a stretch of about 9-10 games where they couldn't beat any team not named the Mets. You know, so I get it, you know, and I'm certainly annoyed with the way this team plays as well. But, you know, is the National League set up in such a way that if the Phillies make a move or two at the deadline and get hot, they could win a wild card? And, you know, is the division out of reach? I mean, should we just be focusing on the wild card right now?
I mean, if you're looking that far, if you're looking ahead to the postseason, then yeah, you got to be looking at the wild card right now. I don't think it's too negative to do so. You just look at the NL East right now and watch the Braves running away at the moment, as you said, at 50-34. I mean, that looks basically uncatchable for a team like the Phillies that has struggled in exactly the ways we're talking about. So if there's two wild card spots, yeah, I think that's where the most interesting race is going to be. You know, a lot of season left. I don't want to disregard that. There's still half of a season, and I don't think we've seen the Phillies be the best team they're going to be this year yet. I still think there's a better Phillies team in there somewhere that can break off a couple of wins and even just get lucky a couple of times to like today. I really wish that chaos at third base and catcher's interference and whatever the hell that mess was had happened in a closer game and gotten, you know, I wish that good luck would have happened somewhere else because, you know, they were able to actually have an offense come through today. So, yeah, I think at this point you're playing for the wild card, unfortunately. I think that should be the goal. And as a general baseball fan who, like Liz, enjoys chaos more so than anything else, I would much rather see them just objectively come down to the wire in getting one of those two spots. Like, there's a lot of teams here that if they're just, you know, a couple of hot streaks away from being a much more interesting team. The Padres really started kind of crappily and slow and underwhelming this year, but they have a lot of really good, interesting young players. I love when the Phillies were playing them. Franmil Reyes was awesome.
Yeah.
I think he's
got a lot of power.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. He's a guy you don't hear about a lot, but playing that team was like an opportunity to get a closer look at them. And they're going to be somebody who's in the mix, I think. I think at this point you got to be thinking wild card just because it's the only realistic path to the postseason for a team that has struggled the way the Phillies have.
How about you, Liz? Do you think the division's out of reach? 5.5 games at this point, is the focus on the wild card now?
I mean, I think we still have half a season to play. I think it's absolutely possible for them to do this. Like, if they play each other and they break off another series win, they play each other at least a few more times. You know, they get a sweep. You know, they don't suck against them. I know it's a lot to ask, but there are a lot of divisional games left. There are a lot of games against them left. And that's where things can change the most. You know, when division rivals are playing each other, you know, when all of them, you know, four of them are playing each other, the standings can look a lot different by morning. So I think it's possible. It's just, it's not that many games. Would you say 5.5?
5.5. If the Mets have to get one more out, and it'll be 5.5.
The way you're talking, it sounds like it's 10. Like, we got to focus on the wild card. Like, yeah, the wild card is there. If they get it, that's great. But I don't think the division is out of reach. It's 5.5 games. It's not like 8, 10, 12. You know, they've climbed their way out a little bit.
It's spoken like somebody who spent the weekend at a bridal shower and not watching this team lose 2 out of 3 to the Marlins.
Listen, I got it. But we also saw them, you know, sweep the Mets. Yeah, the Mets are disintegrating.
And the Braves.
Yeah. And before our very eyes, we saw this. They have the potential. Whether they'll reach it all the time, I don't know. But to say that they can't catch up 5.5 games, or that the Braves, who are losing tonight, as of now, can't go on a losing streak.
Sure.
Well, I don't think they've really done that yet, gone on a serious losing streak or had a tremendously down period. Like, chances are it's going to happen to them. Just wait.
We've spent a lot of time talking about what's wrong with this team. We've spent a lot of time talking about how limited they are as far as routes to improve them. So I think the best, I think it's perfectly realistic right now, if facing a trade market and a shortage of trade assets, that this team is better off lowering expectations than making the key adjustments they need to be as good as the Braves have looked. Yeah, there's a lot of season left, but it just seems so much more realistic that they're going to slide into the playoffs in one of two wild card spots than spend the rest of the season catching up with a team that has bothered to, you know, sign additional talent and has just looked better.
I think at the end of the day here, what they do at the trade deadline is gonna matter a lot, and I think they need to do some things. I don't know that going after Madison Bumgarner is the answer, as we've talked about previously on the podcast. But there are ways that they can strengthen themselves. You know, getting David Robertson back at the end of the month would be like a midseason acquisition, especially if it's good David Robertson. I mean, that obviously is something that remains to be seen. But he's started throwing again, pitching off a mound, and you know, it looks like he thinks he can be ready by the last week in July. We'll see. That would be a heck of a nice addition for the back of the bullpen, giving the Phillies an eighth inning guy to get to Neris. But you know, I agree with you, Liz. I mean, they get the Braves for three games this week, and they, you know, if they do the unexpected and sweep Atlanta or even win two out of three, it's a different ball game. But and the Braves just lost to the Mets, so that lead is down to 5.5 games. The Braves do not have a studly starting rotation, and so you wonder if how long they can ride the super hot offense that they have. But in the meantime, I'm focusing on the wild card. Really, I'm just focusing on the Phillies being able to beat teams like the Marlins, like you said, Justin. You got to be able to just beat teams like the Marlins, and you can't worry about, you know, what anybody else is doing, especially at this time of year.
Which is kind of where I'm at. We have, it goes without saying that anything can happen. We've seen plenty of ridiculous things happen in the second half of a season that have made you forget about the stuff that that made you project your first half predictions. But all we have is what the team's already done, and I think we can stop asking who this team is, and I think we know how they can improve. So it's basically, are they going to improve? What are their options to improve? And we know how handcuffed they are in that regard moving forward. I just think if they're going to be a playoff team, it seems much more likely the wild card is their way in.
Well, up next, we're going to talk about the All-Star game. The All-Star reserves were announced tonight, and the Phillies, once again, will have only one player representing the team at the All-Star game. That's up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so let's talk about the All-Star game, guys. And for the sixth year in a row, the Phillies will have just one All-Star representative. JT Realmuto will be a backup catcher for the National League. JT will be the only Philly it's in Cleveland this year, right, Liz?
Indeed it is.
Okay. So this is the sixth straight year the Phillies have had just one All-Star. Is there anyone, do you think combined you guys could name the other five? The last five Phillies All-Stars.
I didn't look these up on purpose because I'm very, very into this question. And I was able to come up with Herrera, Neshek, and Nola.
Yeah.
Right. Herrera in 16, Neshek in 17, Aaron Nola in 18. In 2015.
Galvis. Was that Freddie Galvis's year?
I don't think Freddie Galvis ever made the
All-Stars. Am I making that up? Maybe I am. I thought.
Yeah. I don't think he ever made the All-Star.
I thought he did. Yeah. That would have been cool.
No, that would have been cool.
Have been like a pitcher or something.
You're hot, Justin. You're right there. You're right.
Was it a reliever or a starter?
It was a reliever.
Guys, I miss Freddie Galvis a lot.
I guess so.
I want to say, who was closing?
You're in the money. You just got to figure. You got to remember who it was that was closing.
Genmar wasn't an All-Star, was he?
No.
Oh God!
Genmar.
Please no.
that would have been insane.
It's right there. Who the hell is it?
Do you need a hint?
Yeah.
He's the all-time Phillies saves leader.
Is it? Papelbon? Are you kidding?
Well, Jonathan Papelbon.
I thought Chooch was in the All-Star game with Papelbon. Or what,
nope.
Did he go more than?
Well,
once?
He was in 2012. Cole Hamels, Papelbon, and Ruiz went in 2012 together.
That's why I didn't guess him. I thought there was.
I was about to, right. And I thought, no, I don't. Was he? I didn't remember him being the All-Star.
I didn't remember him being the lone All-Star in 2015 either. But he was the lone All-Star in 2015, 2014. Okay. Lone Phillies All-Star in 2014.
Okay.
This is
Ben
still
Revere?
You still have Rollins, Utley, and Howard in 2014. Was it Utley?
It was Utley.
No, yeah. Really?
Yes. Chase Utley was the Phillies' lone All-Star in 2014.
I remembered him going like real late in the game, and he wasn't having an especially great year, but he still.
No one else, I think, was either.
Yeah.
So there you go. Utley, Papelbon, Herrera, Nashak, Nola, and now Realmuto, the last six Phillies All-Star representatives. Okay, I'm going to throw one more out at you here. 2013, the Phillies had two All-Stars that
season. Don Brown.
Don Brown was one of them. And can you remember who the other all? This is the last time the Phillies had multiple All Stars. There was one other Phillies player who went with Dominic Brown to the All Star game.
I'll give you a hint.
Take a guess.
No. I was gonna slim the pack a little bit, but no, go ahead.
There is an internet meme going around that has gone around for years based off of this player and his facial expression at the All Star game.
Cliff Lee.
Yeah, where he's totally stone-faced.
We've come a long,
that was,
long way.
Man, Cliff Lee was kind of a dick, but
He was.
He was protest. That was in, like, direct protest to, was it Ruben Amaro Jr. saying something stupid about, you know, why they're losing so much, why do they look so happy in the dugout or something like that?
I didn't remember that. It was during the All-Star Game introduction.
It was, so but I know he was. Maybe I'm remembering something. Maybe I'm conflating two events. I know that happened. The thing I just talked about did happen. I don't know if it was in connection to that, but he was just being a jerk.
I don't know.
I think he was responding to something specific.
Liz and I are fast approaching the episode of Continued Success, where we're going to talk about the 2009 All-Star Game. And if you want to talk about multiple Phillies in the All-Star Game, John, we were actually wondering, do you think in our lifetime there will ever be that many Phillies in an All-Star dugout again?
No.
Because you're also counting Charlie Manuel and his entire coaching staff.
Oh, God, no, it never.
Yeah, because you have to at least get to the World Series in order for your manager to manage that game. So, that seems unlikely. I mean,
That was Howard, Victorino, Wirth. I don't think there was a pitch. Sure. Wait, now I forget. I think Utley probably was there.
You had Ibanez that year in 2009.
Oh, yeah. And Ibanez, yeah.
You had outfield. Didn't you have the whole outfield? Didn't you have Ibanez, Victorino, Wirth?
Victorino won the final vote,
I believe.
America's team, guys. They were.
Really were.
They were America's team. They were darlings. Everyone loved them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had, it was Victorino, Utley, Ibanez, Howard, Victorino, and Wirth. I said Victorino twice, but that's fine.
That's fine. Yeah,
he counts twice.
Yeah. Absolutely, he counts twice. All right. Yeah. So it's going to be hard to duplicate that, especially when you factor in the managers and the coaches, like you said. But if we're talking about Realmuto, we're talking about this All-Star game. You look at the numbers, and you know, he's had a down season offensively. He's hitting .265 with just a .319 on base percentage. He's only slugging .431. Has just 10 home runs, 49 runs scored, 37 RBIs. Hitting out of the five spot for most of the season, which is, and considering how much he's playing a lot. So I'm not even sure how much he plays in the All-Star game, given the fact that the Phillies might ask whoever's managing that game to give Realmuto a blow. He's got an OPS plus of just 95, which is just he's a 745 OPS, fourth among National League catchers. His 2.5 wins above replacement tied for second most among National League catchers. They had to pick a Philly. And obviously, the Phillies, I think, had some other deserving candidates. You look at Scott Kingery, 318, 368, 591. Among National League players with at least 180 plate appearances, Scott has 190. His 149 OPS plus is ninth best in the National Leagues. He's been amazing, but he missed a lot of time this year. And you know, he doesn't really play one position. Those guys are kind of hard to find a place for. You have Hector Neris. I think... Until this last blown save that he had against the Marlins back in the series at home. I'm trying to remember. He had a bad blown save in one of these games. Oh no, it was against the Mets, but they ended up winning the game. That's right. But he's got a 3.18 ERA, 16 saves and 18 opportunities. You could have made a case for Zach Eflin. He's the ninth best ERA among qualified starters in the National League. And you could have made a case for Rhys Hoskins, who, you look at the numbers, 261, 393, 522, 19 dingers, 55 RBIs. He just plays in a
19.
Tough position. Yeah, yeah. He's on pace for somewhere between 37 or 38 home runs
Damn.
This year.
I love that. I don't. It seems like they just happen, and I don't notice them anymore because, you know, I need to learn how to slow down and appreciate every Rhys Hoskins dinger.
No, really. And it seems I've mentioned it a couple times on the podcast that his home runs, doesn't feel like he's had an impactful season. But, you know, you look at the numbers, he's had an on-base percentage around 400 and a slugging percentage over 500 this entire season. But unfortunately, he's only fifth in wins above replacement among first basemen. Pete Alonso, Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, and Josh Bell are all ahead of him. He's fifth in OPS plus two, and Freeman got voted in with Alonso and Bell, the subs. I can't argue with that. You know what I mean? I think, Justin, it seems to me like, you know, Hoskins probably had the best case among all Phillies players, but the numbers crunch at first base meant that it went to Real Muto. Do you think Real Muto was the best representative for this team?
I think if you're looking at Real Muto, it's more just like everyone, it's just like the case of a guy whose numbers aren't terrific this season, but everyone knows he's one of the best, if not the best catcher in the National League, just kind of how he is. I got to tell you, this is really just feels like narratively, this was Scott Kingery's year.
Yeah.
Like it just makes sense in your head to have seen him.
It makes me so sad.
Maybe if he doesn't get hurt and miss a little time the team is like a little better and getting a little more national attention, that of course opens up the idea of, all right, but then that would mean some of the players are better and, you know, you might have a guy like Bryce Harper who's hitting 270 in this scenario and then suddenly he looks a lot more appealing as an all-star because he's Bryce effing Harper.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, it just seems like, you know, that would have been a great way to address that. He's had a great season. He's looked really good. He's young. He's not a household name, but like this is a year where the Phillies are cursed with a lot of underperforming players. And you know, the fact that he plays a bunch of different positions means he's just more likely to get into the game. I don't know. I really liked him as an option, but I totally understand why. If I was making a list of who deserved to go out of this weird team that has, you know, been in first place for so much of the year and full of good players, but none of them looked very good for the first half of the year for some reason, Kingery's just, I don't know. He's the most fun, definitely. And the numbers he put up definitely qualified him to make an appearance.
Yeah, Liz, what do you think? I mean, as of all the Phillies I just named, or maybe there's one I haven't mentioned that you think would have made for a good representative. I do think it's interesting that, I mean, Bryce Harper wasn't even a consideration. I mean, even among Phillies fans. I mean, Harper had a nice game on Sunday, four RBIs in the game, and he seems to be hitting better, playing better lately. But
when you're a guy everyone thinks is pompous, everyone has decided is pompous and stuck up, and you just signed like this huge contract, everyone wants to talk about how overrated you are. Everyone on every other team, especially in the NL East, is concentrating so much more on hating Bryce Harper than appreciating anything he does. And yeah, he hasn't been very good. He hasn't been as good as we wanted him to be this year. And I think right now in the first year after he signs a deal like that, everyone's going to work way harder to make him into a villain. So I don't think he really had much of a chance.
No, he's not, you know, he's just not doing good enough. I'd love to submit a homer ticket, but my conscience won't let me do that. And he's just not worthy. He's just not worthy of it. You know, Scott Kingery is worthy. There didn't seem to be much of a push. The Phillies didn't seem to know what to do. Like, they, you know, you run all-star campaigns, and, you know, some did it harder than others, and I think the Phillies just didn't get behind him as an option because it's hard to know what to do with him. Where does he go?
Yeah, because he plays all over the place,
But it would have been nice to see, you know, the Phillies have sort of a nice history, at least recent history of first-time all-stars. You know, I'll remember Dom Brown, Aaron Nola, you know, Hoskins last year, even just going to the home run derby, even Herrera, you know, even with what happened to him, I'll remember that period fondly because he was so happy to go and, you know, go for the first time and be there, you know, and that's always fun to see. And it would have been cool to see that from Scott Kingery. And also, I heard Scott Kingery talk this weekend. I did not expect that voice to come out of his face.
I don't know what I don't know that I've ever heard Kingery talk. Yeah. What's the voice? Is it too low? Too
it's
high?
It's very nasally? Low. He has a southern accent. I don't know why I didn't. I mean, I'm sure I knew all of those things at one point. But I watched my dad. I spent the weekend at my parents' house in Harrisburg, and my dad recorded a program from NBC Sports Philly called Signing Harper, which is just a lot of middle-aged to older white dudes talking about the process we all read a whole lot about, only they're just doing it with their mouths. But it was interesting. It was just a lot of talking and a lot of very intense music. And they talked to Scott Kingery at one point about, you know, finding out that Harper had been signed. And it's much lower and, you know, very husky. I was just like, I was taken aback. I don't know why I thought it would sound a whole lot different.
So remember a couple of years ago, there was so much excitement around this team that, like, we were doing stuff like those guys were voting around the clock for Pat Burrell to get the final vote. And, like, it didn't work, which is hilarious. But, like, they made a big deal out of it. And it just seems like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not, this team has been missing that level of excitement to have the fan enthusiasm to a point where they could push a Scott Kingery campaign into the All-Star team, into the All-Star game. Like this, they have yet to be so hot or become so, like, breakthrough as a contending team that everyone believes they're a contending team, that they can't summon the enthusiasm, they can't summon the fan support to get Scott Kingery into the All-Star game. I mean, it's something I've kind of thought all season long, and this is just another possible example of it, that, like, this team and fan base and the city and everything, it hasn't quite all cohesively gelled yet.
That's, like, a good point.
There's a lot of new players on this team, and they just, it doesn't feel like before, and maybe it won't, but at the same time, there's a very general sense of enthusiasm anytime a team is, you know, we're entering a new good era of Phillies baseball, and we all thought we were entering one. It just doesn't feel like we're quite there yet with excitement. It feels like there's a lot more doubt and negativity around the team. Maybe that has to do with high expectations and players not meeting them, even though it would be impossible to meet the high level of expectations you have from a $330 million contract. But, you know, I just don't, it just doesn't feel like we're there yet. And I think that you might be seeing that in the form of, you know, people weren't stuffing the ballot box for Scott Kingery. And you know, they got Raul Ibanez into the All-Star game.
That was such a different time, though. The team from the year before had really captured the imagination of a lot of people. You know, they had won the World Series. Everyone was here, was a hero. Everyone on the team was still doing great, and they were worthy of votes, not just from the Phillies fan base, but from fan base, you know, from people all around. You know, mm-hmm. Phillies fans were so excited. That team was good, but it also earned all of that. And this team hasn't quite done that yet.
Well, and also, too, and we'll hit a break here in just a second, but also, I think with those early teams, you know, most of those guys were homegrown. I mean, Ibanez mm-hmm. wasn't, but the core of that team, we kind of grew up with that team. You know, we saw them take their first baseball baby steps together and then finally watch them sprint to the World Series. So I think it felt more like a reason to celebrate, because we, you know, the players, the good players we have on this team outside of Hoskins and Kingery, and I guess you could throw Zach Eflin into the mix as well, they all came from someplace else. We're already established. Yep. I mean, how long is Real Muto going to be here? He's only signed through next year. You know, there's no contract extension yet with him. I mean, you know, that's kind of what I think, you know, you're right, Justin. Everyone is kind of holding this team at arm's length right now because they haven't met expectations, because they don't know what to make of this team yet. And they haven't had a long relationship with so many of the players on this team. And so, you know, all that factors into, but I mean, with a guy like, and with Scott Kingery, last year's season, I think just crushed everyone's expectations for him. And I think people were still not sure if Kingery was actually good, even if as he was putting up the numbers he's putting up this year. I think there's still probably people who aren't sure if Scott Kingery's good. I'm not sure that Scott Kingery is going to be really good for a long time. But, you know, so it's one of those things where last year colors things, and the fact that this team is mercenary in a lot of ways, that they've brought in a lot of hired help almost, it seems like. I think it's one of the reasons why, and, you know, you go through these, you know, death spirals that the team went through last year, and for the, you know, first half of two-thirds of June this year, it definitely sours people. You know, when if the Phillies were red hot in June, they might have had more success with the All-Star ballot, yeah. And they just picked a bad time to go into a horrible funk for All-Star voting purposes.
You're absolutely right, Liz. Like, 2008 gave, you know, the Phillies had a much more national, they were a nationally known entity by the time 2009 rolled around.
Yeah.
I checked after you said that. In the 2008 All-Star game, their All-Stars were Utley and Lidge, and, you know, that was it. They weren't filling the dugout, and they went on to win the World Series. So, meanwhile, on the AL side, Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee, and Jonathan Papelbon.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Also, Michael Young and Grady Sizemore. Yeah. And J.D. Drew. Hey, JD look at that.
Fans are still afraid of being hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long time since the team has been good. This team's not been good. They have a lot of potential, but they just haven't fulfilled it yet. And I can't blame anyone for not giving their votes to... I mean, did the Phillies do a tremendous push behind Kingery? No. And so you can't... Like, what are the fans going to do? A few of them could make it up, but in this age of social media, the Phillies team account has to be behind it to start it, and they weren't. And I think that's disappointing to me.
Yeah, there were little pushes here and there, but, you know, occasional tweets.
It has
but it
to
was
be,
not,
like, a major thing.
A campaign.
Yeah.
There was no campaign. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, look
right.
what the Orioles did for Trey Mancini, who got snubbed, but they still, like, went nuts over that. I mean, yeah, there's not a whole lot going on in Baltimore, so... That's like a fun thing for them to be able to do. That, like, Trey Mancini's been really good this year, and he probably should have been an All-Star. And they made a huge push for him. Everything they tweeted about was vote for him, like get him in the All-Star game. And, you know, that's a good way to introduce somebody to fans. So, yeah, I think that would have been a good move.
Well, up next, we're going to talk about some Phillies minor leaguers and talk a little bit about free agency, because as we're recording this, the NBA had their opening night of free agency, and it was wild. Obviously, Sixers fans listening to this know what went on, and we're not going to break down NBA moves, but I do just want to kind of compare what we saw with NBA free agency and what we saw with Major League Baseball's free agency over the winter. So we'll tackle all that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so... We don't normally talk about the minor leaguers all that much on the Sunday Night Podcast, but I wanted to just chat real quick about a couple different minor leaguers, starting off with Mickey Moniak. There was a little bit of speculation after Redding's game here on Sunday. It looked like he was pulled from the lineup, and it did not look like there was an apparent injury. And that got a lot of people talking on Twitter about, you know, are we in hug watch mode? Is there going to be some kind of trade involving Moniak for a pitcher? You know, then you started see there's some leaks that were coming out that, you know, there were giant scouts at AAA.
Oh,
and could they be looking at Will Smith or Madison Bumgarner? And, you know, is Moniak a part of some kind of deal, or is he going to get promoted to AAA because they're going to trade Hazley or something like that? It all turned out it doesn't appear as though there's anything like that going on. Some reports are that he tweaked his hamstring in the game here on Sunday. But we should just mention here, I know Mickey Moniak, I still don't think any of us believe is going to be a star player in this league. But in 65 games with Reading, he has 16 walks. I'm sorry, in his first 65 games this year, he hit .260 with a .304 on-base percentage. But over his last nine games, seven walks, .333 average, .475 on-base percentage. He leads the league in triples. And I keep having to remind myself, he's just still 21 years old playing in AA.
He's a baby.
He is a baby still, yeah. I mean, it's funny that I forgot that how young he was. But, I mean, if I also saw on my timeline, if, again, I'm not the biggest Madison Bumgarner fan in the world, but if the deal is Mickey Moniak for Madison Bumgarner, I'm doing that.
That's,
you know,
not what
I'm
it's
not sure.
Be. I can't imagine.
No,
that.
It's not what it's going to be. But and even if Moniak's involved in a deal for somebody, I'm not getting all worked up about Mickey Moniak leaving. You know what I mean? He's had a few good weeks in AA, where in Reading everybody has good weeks in hitting in Reading. So I'm kind of intrigued by Moniak's season so far this year because he is just 21 in Reading. But I mean, come on, everybody. Let's remind ourselves what we all thought of Mickey Moniak before 2 weeks ago. I mean, I do not believe we're looking at a star player. I don't know. And then we have Alec Bohm, who hit three home runs in a little over a week since getting promoted to Reading. Would you guys bring him up this year in a pennant race if Franco is struggling, if he keeps playing like this?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
We have to lose.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Agree 100%. I think, you know, could happen. I mean, the way he's hitting, he's moving quickly. His number three overall pick a couple years ago. So, or was it last year? Number three overall pick last year. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a bigger point to expand on there, but his development has been really enthusiastic.
One of the few guys that's been encouraging in the minors this year.
We do not see a lot of top Phillies picks doing that.
No.
So if it got to a point where he was crushing it at the next level and the Phillies needed a third baseman in a playoff race, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, he's not going to be a savior. You wonder what dropping a kid like that into a playoff race is really going to do. And you know what? It gives him experience, if nothing else. And yeah. It gives us it's fun. You know, like
yeah. Let's no, I love it.
It's
absolutely
better than trading him for somebody who's not going to be here for long and not probably make that much of a difference. So yeah, you'd always rather see. And that's kind of the, not to keep hitting on this point, but that's kind of what we were just talking about. That like you bond more. It's easier to bond with a player who's come up through the team's farm system who you're familiar with than to watch like a bunch of free agents try to like work stuff out. Like, yeah, I'm glad the Phillies made the deals they made and that their strength was, all right, look, we got the money to sign free agents and we know what deals we want to make to improve this team. And they did that and they executed it and they made a better team. And that's great. They didn't have a Ronald Acuna to build around. So they just created a team that, that could theoretically compete with the team that had Ronald Acuna. But, you know, at the end of the day, you wind up with a bunch of strangers, at least for a little while, until we get to know these guys a little better and it's a little, you know, people gel a little more. It's going to be more appealing to the idea of Alec Bohm working his way up through the farm system and then jumping into a playoff race. That's awesome. So, yeah, I would definitely be into that idea.
One other guy, Nick Williams, hitting .411 with a 1,038 OPS.
You know, some guys might just be AAA players.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah,
but they do.
Yep, yeah. That's kind of where I am on Nick Williams. I'm not reading any more into that. Okay, so real quick, free agency. We watched the NBA free agency on Sunday here, and it's insane. Like, as soon as free agency kicks in, all the star players are signing that day. And it's a whirlwind. Teams are making trades. Obviously, the Sixers did a sign and trade with Jimmy Butler. They sign out Al Horford. You know, they get Josh Richardson. And that's nothing. Like, the Nets just acquired like an NBA title contending team in an afternoon. You know, it's nuts what goes on. And the contrast to Major League Baseball's offseason is amazing. I mean, we talked a little bit about it during the offseason when it took Bryce Harper 3 months and 4 months, Manny Machado to pick a team. Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell waited until the middle of the actual playing season to decide where they were going to go play. I mean, there are obviously, Liz, fundamental differences in the financial structure of these two leagues. When you have a salary cap situation and you have a league where there is no salary cap, yeah, the luxury tax acts as a soft cap, but you know, there are strict rules in place as to how much money and how many years you can offer certain players in the NBA. And I guess it kind of limits things a little bit and makes it easier to foster what the NBA is doing right now. But it's hard not to see why one is way more popular than the other right now.
They're just really different leagues. They're just really, really different. You know, basketball has history, but you know, every single sport's going to be up its own ass about its history. But the NBA is willing to make changes. They're willing to do things that are different. They're not. They know that they need to be young. You know, they also, you know, it's majority African American and Black. That's what it is. It's, you know, there are lots of people of color in the NBA, and that changes how it is too. You know, it's just different, and it's more fun and interesting, and I'm glad I get a chance to write about it, you know, because it's so entertaining. Like, dudes have petty beefs all the time. Like, baseball, it's starting to percolate. Like, what was it, the Adam Eaton Todd Frazier thing that was so impenetrable no one cared, but everyone cared for like a day and a half. And I'm like, yes, we need more of this. Like, dudes need to have petty beefs about everything. There's so many games. This should be thing all the time. It's entertaining. It keeps people involved. You know, it doesn't have to be professional wrestling, but, you know, God forbid two dudes just start fronting each other on social media for no reason. Let's just see it.
Yeah.
Show some emotion, yeah. You robots.
There you go. And so, Justin, what do you think? I mean, as I mean, I don't know how big a consumer of the NBA product you are, but you know, I just don't know what could baseball do to kind of match that without completely restructuring their financial the way they do their contracts and all that.
I mean, that's the problem, is that baseball seems like it's at a complete loss to have the sort of more fast-paced, enthusiastic, just everything about the NBA is there's a reason it's so much more popular, especially with younger audiences right now. And it's because it's got that professional wrestling element to it, where guys will insult each other, or they actually seem like real people online. And I don't know, it's more evidence that this is an ongoing problem for baseball, because I love the NBA free agency. I mean, it's a way in for so many people who are just kind of peripheral fans of basketball. I mean, you guys know as well as I do, being a fan of any team in Philadelphia, you're eventually going to find your way into any of the other teams, even if it's not a sport you've followed your whole life. And that's awesome to be able to bandwagon on to like the Sixers as they become a contending team. Like that's awesome. And the way free agency goes down is so much more entertaining. When I think about the winter we spent just like talking about nothing. I mean, it was
torturous.
It's just uninteresting, and everything it's just lightning fast. I don't think they literally ring a bell, but they kept saying at 6 o'clock they're gonna, you know, the free agency bell gets rung, and suddenly everybody's, you know, conniving and having meetings and revealing their secrets. And in baseball, it was like a couple of meetings over the course of 6 months while we're all sitting around waiting to figure out if that construction worker yelled at Manny Machado enough for him to want to come to Philadelphia. I mean, there's just no comparison. It's comical. So yeah, I think if you're looking for a model to follow, obviously the NBA's got it down. But man, baseball's got a lot to figure out, I think.
All right, well, as we're looking at the road ahead for the Phillies here over the next week, just two more series before they get to the All-Star break. They have a three-game series in Atlanta this week, and then they get to play the Mets again in New York leading into the All-Star break. Obviously, they can really help themselves this week and get themselves feeling good heading into the All-Star break by having a good week this week. But again, the Atlanta Braves, their loss on Sunday night aside, are playing very well. The Phillies will face... I'm very interested in the first game of this series. The Phillies are going to take on Dallas Keuchel, who has not pitched all that well in his first two games with the Atlanta Braves, but that doesn't mean much against the Phillies. Every time the Phillies face a guy they have really never seen before, they seem to not perform up to standards. And so even though Keuchel has given up 3 earned runs in each of his first 2 starts, hasn't gone 6 innings yet, it'll be very interesting to see how he does against the Phillies lineup. Somebody named Bryce Wilson will be making his second start since being recalled from AAA. He has an 8.31 ERA. He'll start the second game of the series for Atlanta. Mike Soroka, who's going to the All-Star game, he's amazing. He'll start the finale for Atlanta. The Phillies have not announced who their starters are going to be this week, but just kind of looking ahead at this series here, Justin, how are you feeling about this last week before the All-Star break?
You know, I would say my guess would be the Phillies win one of these games, but then just hearing you list the starting pitchers for the Braves, and I'm just like, why did we just spend the last hour talking about the Braves being so good?
The starting rotation is a weakness. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, who's got the good pitching in the National League? The Dodgers, obviously, but like, what about that team doesn't work? So, yeah, in the NL East, I mean, God, why is this? But then, like, that's the problem with losing to the Marlins so much, is like, this offense should be alive against pitching of that caliber. This offense should be able to tear down a guy who hasn't been pitching in Major League Baseball for most of the season, and it should definitely be able to beat Bryce Wilson.
Bryce Wilson is his name, yes.
Who was the guy? Scott Newcomb spent most of the season, or spent...
Sean Newcomb.
Had just come back from AAA when the Phillies played the Braves last time. Like, there's a way in against the Braves, and this team just and that's what's so frustrating about this team, is that they should be able to beat these teams. It's not that the talent isn't there, it's like it's there, and they're getting soft tossed meatballs by like guys who haven't been in the league for most of the season. So I'm just so frustrated with them right now. I don't want to bet more than one win when they can't win a series against the Marlins, but like, man, it's just the long season argument. You wake up tomorrow and it's a new day, it's a new series. Yeah. So, you know, we can only react to what's happening in front of us. But man, on paper, it's tough to bet against this team, except for all the reasons we have to do so.
And Liz, I will say, I want to get your thoughts on this as we move forward here, but I'll be very interested to see how this team performs against Braves pitching, since kind of I'm really looking to that first game against the Mets where they kind of changed their hitting philosophy around. I think that could be a big turning point for this offense, because since that day, they scored 13 runs today. They scored 6 runs on Saturday. They only scored 2 runs, both of those on a Velasquez home run on Friday. So obviously the offense didn't do much on Friday, but they scored 6 against the Mets on Thursday, 5 against the Mets on Wednesday, 7 on Tuesday, 13 on Monday. That's a good set of production from this Phillies offense. If they can continue to give them 4, 5, 6 runs a game, they should be able to beat teams like the Atlanta Braves. And they're going to be approaching this Braves rotation and these Braves starters differently than they did previously. So I'm curious again to see what they can do here this week.
I mean, like you both said, they have a huge chance to, you know, make a dent in a team that they need to beat. You know, I mean, they're only as good as the last thing that they've done, and the last thing they did was lose 2 of 3 to the Marlins. So,
yep, that's fair.
You know, they have to do well this week. You know, I was very positive earlier. They had, you know, I think that the first place in the division is still in reach. But you're both correct. The wild card is absolutely a more practical option, and probably what's going to end up happening if they manage to make it in at all. And you know, as positive as I am, if they can't win this week when they need to, then, you know, do they even deserve that?
Yeah, it's fair. It's a fair question. Although at this point, you know, rest of the National League teams, none of them deserve it either. So we're all amongst the undeserving so far at the moment. Any final thoughts, Justin, before we wrap things up here?
This is one of the few episodes where I'm ending it at a different point than where we started, frankly. Now I'm just like, this team, people should expect this team to be able to beat the Braves pitching just because of the level they're presenting here. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think let's just get to the All-Star break and see how this team looks then, because I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago we said they were in free fall. A week ago it was, all right, well, now they're back on course because they swept the Mets. I mean, it's just, it's an education every year in the fluctuating enthusiasm level of a long baseball season. And at this point, I think you gotta hope, yeah, somebody hits the ball. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I get you. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
Man, I need them to win next week. I really,
I can't take,
we all felt, yeah, so good coming off of that Mets series, and then they just step on the rake in the backyard and it hits them in the face. And we all have to, yeah, live with it as it stings for the next, you know, 3 days. It's terrible. They need to win this week, and if they lose, watching them do it against the Braves is going to be really depressing. I will be a lot less, yep, positive next week if they suck this week.
And that would be fair, and that'd be a pretty lousy way to go into the All-Star break. And I'll just say one last thing before we get out of here. It wasn't the bamboo, it was the Mets. All right? So, unfortunately, I feel bad if y'all bought the T-shirts. And, you know, hey, if you want the bamboo T-shirts, we can go to the Good Fight, and we got them up on the store there.
John's
as well.
Just trying to get the market started on his, yeah, Terrace to Naris T-shirts.
I know. God, that's amazing.
That's pretty good, it's, right? It's, I mean, come on. It's terrible. I know, but I'm going, you know what, I'm going with it. All right, that'll do it for episode number 299 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for coming on the podcast again this week. And folks, make sure to check out the Patreon for Hittin' Season. We got a lot of bonus content up there. Justin and Trev have a new Dirty Inning Hit and Run that you can catch there. And we got lots of other good stuff there too, so make sure you go to patreon.com/hittin'season. And make sure to tell a friend about the podcast. Go to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and a review, and tell them, all your buddies, to subscribe to the podcast, download them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that they like to get their podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.